Hi, this is Tony Bruschi. You're about to listen to our brand new podcast, Dark Side of Wikipedia. Being a brand new show, we need to let other folks know that this thing exists so we can keep doing it. I'd greatly appreciate your help in that effort by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, and I'm going to make it worth your while as well. We're going to give away a $200 Amazon gift certificate to one person who left us a review. All you have to do is leave that review on Apple Podcasts, take a screenshot of it, and then send it to me. Send it to review@darksideofwiki.com. So, again, to review, leave the review at Apple Podcasts, take the screenshot, and then send it to me. review@darksideofwiki.com. That's the email address. review@darksideofwiki.com. Very soon, I'll select one person to get that $200 Amazon gift card as a thank you for leaving that review and letting other folks know we exist. Also, be sure to share us on social media, let your friends and family know, and be sure to press that subscribe button as well as we get another great podcast off the ground. I hope you enjoy The Dark Side of Wikipedia. The small northern town of Plainfield, Wisconsin is not the setting one would suspect for one of the most ghoulish killers in American history. However, over several fateful days, the innocent residents of this quaint little town would find themselves on the wrong side of a disturbing monster, one who had turned their lives upside down and their bodies inside out. This is the story of Ed Gein.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Edward Theodore Gein, also known as the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul, was an American convicted murderer and body snatcher. His crimes committed around his hometown of Plainfield, Wisconsin, gathered widespread notoriety after authorities discovered Gein had exhumed corpses from local graveyards and fashioned trophies and keepsakes from their bones and skin. Gein confessed to killing two women, tavern owner Mary Hogan in 1954, and a Plainfield hardware store owner Bernice Warden in 1957. Gein was initially found unfit to stand trial and confined to a mental health facility. In 1968, Gein was found guilty but legally insane of the murder of Warden and was reprimanded to a psychiatric institution. He died at Mendota Mental Health Institute of Liver Cancer and Respiratory Failure on July 26, 1984, at age 77. He's buried next to his family in the Plainfield Cemetery in a now unmarked grave. So that's how we begin The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
That's pretty dark.
I thought we'd start on a happy note.
Okay.
Tony and Jenny Bruschi joining you on episode number one of our brand new program. And on normal days, normal episodes, we won't have to go through the ground rules of how this show works, but just to give you an idea what we do on this program, we examine very dark stories from history. We discuss them, we go through them, and just kind of give some insight, thoughts, and maybe help you get educated on what some of these crazy, horrible people did. I find myself getting lost in Wikipedia quite often, where I'll be searching something I see on Dateline, or like, what is this? And I find it, and I'm sitting there reading and reading and reading. So what this show is made up of, literally, word for word, a majority or a good chunk of Wikipedia entries on dark things, dark people, dark events. And then our commentary kind of chaptered out between them. So that's how we do it here on The Dark Side of Wikipedia. And if you have a case, a story, an entry, that's kind of a key. It needs to have a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
Feel free to let us know about it. And we may use that on a future episode. We got like our own little laundry list of horrible shit to talk about. Mm-hmm. So that That's how it's going to roll. Please press subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you don't mind, leave us a positive review over there on Apple Podcasts. That helps us let people know that we exist. Without that, we'd be kind of dead in the water. So thank you in advance for that. So here we go. Ed Gein, what do you know about this lovely individual?
Only that you make reference to him whenever we talk about a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
He's your go-to.
He's like my BTK.
Well, yeah, because he's local to where you grew up.
Sure.
So that, you know, is part of the reason I had not heard of him.
Really?
Yeah, and he was an early serial killer.
He was. This was in 1950, so it wasn't as recent as like BTK was. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I guess in Wisconsin, we had a lot of really twisted people that just couldn't stand the cold and just killed. And then this guy, you're going to be amazed at what he did. Mm-hmm. It goes beyond killing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of touched on some of that at the intro of the crazy shit that that this individual did. And it's an unmarked grave now. And I got a story with that too. Even a personal story.
Okay.
He was just one of those characters that, I don't know, I guess, doesn't every place have serial killers that are crazy and horrible? I guess is my thought. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Or is it just kind of certain sects of the country where it's like, yeah, we got our pocket full of nuts?
I think most places have somebody that they can draw to mind when they think of serial killer.
Okay.
You know, it may not be a famous one, but it may be somebody that, you know, kind of terrorized their local area or their region.
Yeah. And then it just continues on the lore, mm-hmm, really forever. And then you just keep thinking about it, keep hearing it in pop. Because like I said, I mean, I was a kid. This guy had been dead. Well, he died when I was like two. Mm-hmm. But as far as the crimes, those were, you know, 20 years in the past. So,
sure.
But still, you know, fresh enough, I guess, in people's minds. And I guess just the insanity of what he did,
mm-hmm,
with the dead is what makes him, you know, he was the inspiration for many movies, you'll come to find out too. So, yes, nightmares are a coming. What are you going to be? Let me ask you this. What are you more prone to have a nightmare by? Is it ghost stories like we have on our other program, or is it these real life people who did this shit? And that's so that ghost stories are not real life, but you know, obviously people are more physical,
mm-hmm,
and pose a lot greater danger and risk to the living than a ghost in many cases.
I will have nightmares over things that you cannot kill or lock away.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that would be ghosts.
Okay.
And demons. Whereas something that, you know, they can get caught and locked away or, you know,
mm-hmm,
eventually killed, that will not scare me as much. It's things you can't battle that seem to scare me the most.
I see. Okay. Well, here we go. We're going to jump into the second chapter of our Ed Gein story here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Ed Gein was born in La Crosse County, Wisconsin on August 27th, 1906. The second of two boys of George Philip Gein and Augusta Wilhelm Gein. Gein had an elder brother, Henry George Gein. Augusta hated her husband, an alcoholic who was unable to keep a job. He had worked at various times as a carpenter, tanner, and an insurance salesman. George owned a local grocery shop for a few years, but sold the business, and the family left the city to live in an isolation on a 155-acre farm in the town of Plainfield, Wisconsin, in Washara County, which became the Gein family's permanent residence. Augusta took advantage of the farm's isolation by turning away outsiders who could have influenced her sons. Edward left the farm only to attend school. Outside of school, he spent most of his time doing chores on the farm. Augusta was fervently religious and nominally Lutheran. She preached to her boys about the innate immorality of the world, the evils of drinking, and her belief that all women except herself were naturally promiscuous and instruments of the devil. She reserved time every afternoon to read to them from the Bible, usually selecting verses from the Old Testament concerning death, murder, and divine retribution. Edward was shy, and classmates and teachers remembered him as having strange mannerisms, such as seemingly random laughter, as if he were laughing at his own personal jokes. To make matters worse, his mother punished him whenever he tried to make friends. Despite his poor social development, he did fairly well in school, particularly in reading. So we know a little bit more about his upbringing. I think that's important when we talk about serial killers or people that kind of go AWOL. Like, where did this come from?
It sounds like it started very much at home.
Yeah. You would kind of think so. Mm-hmm. And I think our next chapter will dive into that even a little bit deeper. But anytime I think you're isolating someone and you're not letting them kind of get out into the world, at least, you know, somewhat, mm-hmm. You're going to run into an imbalance of them developing and understanding how things work around them, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm guessing that might, not that it goes to the extreme that this man eventually does, but this goes, there's something there.
Yeah.
There's something very much there with his childhood and his upbringing. Should we jump into our next chapter?
Mm-hmm.
On April 1st, 1940, Ed's father, George, died of heart failure caused by his alcoholism. He was 66 years old. Henry and Ed began doing odd jobs around town to help cover living expenses. The brothers were generally considered reliable and honest by residents of the community. While both worked as handymen, Ed also frequently babysat for neighbors. He enjoyed babysitting, seeming to relate more easily to children than to adults. Henry began dating a divorced single mother of two and planned on moving in with her. Henry worried about his brother's attachment to their mother and often spoke ill of her around Ed, who responded with shock and hurt. On May 16, 1944, Henry and Ed were burning away marsh vegetation on the property. The fire got out of control, drawing the attention of the local fire department. By the end of the day, the fire having been extinguished and the firefighters gone, Ed reported his brother missing. With lanterns and flashlights, a search party searched for Henry, whose dead body was found lying face down. Apparently, he'd been dead for some time, and it appeared that the cause of death was heart failure, since he'd not been burned or injured otherwise. It was later reported in Harold Schlechter's biography of Gein, Deviant, that Henry had bruises on his head. The police dismissed the possibility of foul play, and the county coroner later officially listed asphyxiation as the cause of death. The authorities accepted the accident theory, but no official investigation was conducted, and an autopsy was not performed. Some suspected that Ed Gein killed his brother. Questioning Gein about the death of Bernice Warden in 1957, state investigator brought up questions about Henry's death. George W. Arndt, who studied the case, wrote that, in retrospect, it was possible and likely that Henry's death was the Cain and Abel aspect of the case. Gein and his mother were now alone. Augusta had a paralyzing stroke shortly after Henry's death, and Gein devoted himself to taking care of her. Sometime in 1945, Gein later recounted he and his mother visited a man named Smith, who lived nearby, to purchase straw. According to Gein, Augusta witnessed Smith beating a dog. A woman inside the Smith home came outside and yelled for him to stop, but Smith beat the dog to death. Augusta was extremely upset by this scene. However, what bothered her did not appear to be the brutality towards the dog, but rather the presence of the woman. Augusta told Ed that the woman was not married to Smith, so he had no business being there. Smith's harlot. Augusta angrily called her. She had a second stroke soon after, and her health deteriorated rapidly. She died on December 29th, 1945, at the age of 67. Ed was devastated by her death. In the words of an author, he had lost his only friend and one true love, and he was absolutely alone in the world. Remind you of anyone?
A little bit.
Real people or characters in a movie?
Characters in a movie.
I was going to say real people. I didn't really, I was like, oh, actually it does remind me of somebody.
Well, it does remind me of somebody. Yeah. But more so like Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mother. That's crazy that his first, well, they think maybe his first killing was his brother.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those times where back then they didn't really, you know, they didn't dive into super duper autopsies and forensic evidence, you know. Did that really exist? I mean,
there was some.
But not nearly to the level that it is today.
Right.
I think people were accepted a lot more just at their word of like, oh, there was an accident. Okay, thanks. We'll see you at the big boy later, you know.
Yeah.
It was just very, you know, written off. You get away with tons of shit back then when you look at it.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder how many people got away with a lot of shit that didn't get caught doing their horrible things, that just lived and died and nobody knows what really happened because there wasn't the level of investigation and intrigue and, you know, digging that goes on today.
Mm-hmm.
Although, are they going to look back at times, you know, now or prior to now, also as you could get away with tons of shit back then because we're going to be so, you know, watched or monitored. I mean, there's a certain extent that we are right now. And those of us who aren't doing horrible things really are okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than it's just like, God damn it. I'm getting that ad for things that I, on my phone that I talked about and never searched for. So I know something's listening, but I'm not like, uberly concerned. Like, there's ways of looking at these things, and it just depends. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but it all depends how you look at it, where your devices, your Alexas, your whatever's in every room can hear you.
Yeah.
They're monitoring you to a certain extent. There's probably not, I don't think there's like somebody sitting there listening to me, but their computers are pulling up algorithms and trying to learn your behaviors, really for advertising and monetary purposes.
Mm-hmm.
But they can also be used if there is a crime. I think it has been done already.
Yeah.
Where somebody had contacted, I think, Amazon and said, yeah, we don't really know exactly what happened here, but they have an Alexa. Can you track this down and can you pull the audio of, if it's there, of what happened in this house at this time? And I think it happened. If I'm right, I could be off on that, but something along those lines has already occurred.
Yes.
So there are ways like that where, well, the Uber monitoring, it can protect things or at least can solve things. Maybe, you know, that Alexa's not going to stop the killer or anything, but it's going to be able to, at the very least, give some insight to something where you otherwise wouldn't have it. Is that good or bad, or is that too intrusive?
I kind of go both ways on that. I don't like the fact that it's listening and pulling up whatever I talk about, but I do kind of like the fact that, you know, maybe somebody eventually, that will be a deterrent for crime because they'll be like, oh, well, they've got Alexas all over the house or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to stop like your uber crazy, crazy people, but I think you may stop the people who think, I'm going to get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, is it good or bad? I mean, you can argue both ways. And I really, I'm not saying I really feel 100% it's good, but I think it's going to be more of a normal way of life as this stuff is just there for generations, that they're going to not really know another way. And
yeah,
it's just going to become, yeah, that is how this works. Why would we think anything different? Why would we do anything different?
Because
they never knew a world prior. And they'll only see the areas of where it's been beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Let's go to our next chapter. Gene held on to the farm and enjoyed money from odd jobs. He boarded up rooms used by his mother including the upstairs, downstairs parlor, and living room, leaving them untouched, while the rest of the house became increasingly squalid. These rooms remained pristine. Gein lived thereafter in a small room next to the kitchen. Around this time, he became interested in reading pulp magazines and adventure stories, particularly those involving cannibals or Nazi atrocities. Gein was a handyman and received a farm subsidy from the federal government starting in 1951. He occasionally worked for the local municipal road crew and crop threshing crews in the area. Sometime between 1946 and 1957, he also sold an 80-acre parcel of land that his brother Henry had once owned. Then, on the morning of November 16, 1957, Plainfield Hardware Store owner Bernice Warden disappeared. A Plainfield resident reported that the hardware store's truck had been driven out from the rear of the building at around 9:30 a.m. The hardware store was closed the entire day. Some area residents believe this was because of deer hunting season. Bernice Warden's son, Deputy Sheriff Frank Warden, entered the store around 5 p.m. to find the store's cash register open and bloodstains on the floor. Frank Warden told investigators that Ed Gein had been in the store the evening before his mother's disappearance and that he would return the next morning for a gallon of antifreeze. A sales slip for a gallon of antifreeze was the last receipt written by Warden on the morning she disappeared. On the evening of the same day, Gein was arrested at the West Plainfield grocery store, and the Washera County Sheriff's Department searched the Gein farm. A Washera County Sheriff's deputy discovered Warden's decapitated body in a shed on Gein's property, hung upside down by her legs with a crossbar at her ankles and ropes at her wrists. The torso was dressed out like a deer. She'd been shot with a .22 caliber rifle, and the mutilations were made after her death. Searching the house, authorities found many things. Whole human bones and fragments. A wastebasket made of human skin. Human skin covering several chair seats. Skulls on his bedpost. Female skulls, some with the tops sawn off. Bowls made from human skulls. A corset made from a female torso, skin from shoulders to waist. Leggings made from human leg skin. Masks made from the skin of female heads. Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag. Mary Hogan's skull in a box. Bernice Warden's entire head in a burlap sack. Bernice Warden's heart in a plastic bag in front of Gein's pot-bellied stove. 9 vulvas in a shoebox. A young girl's dress and the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old. A belt made from human nipples. 4 noses. A pair of lips and a window shade drawstring. A lampshade made from the skin of a human face. Fingernails from female fingers. These artifacts were photographed at the state crime laboratory and then destroyed. When questioned, Gein told investigators that between 1947 and 1952, he made as many as 40 nocturnal visits to 3 local graveyards to exhume recently buried bodies while he was in a daze-like state. On about 30 of those visits, he said he came out of the daze while in the cemetery, left the grave in good order, and returned home empty-handed. On the other occasions, he dug up the graves of recently buried middle-aged women he thought resembled his mother and took the bodies home, where he tanned their skins to make his paraphernalia. Gein admitted to stealing from 9 graves from local cemeteries and led investigators to their locations. Alan Wilimowski of the State Crime Laboratory participated in opening 3 test graves identified by Gein. The caskets were inside wooden boxes. The top boards ran crossways, not lengthwise. The tops of the boxes were about 2 feet below the surface in sandy soil. Gein had robbed the graves soon after the funerals while the graves were not completed. The test graves were exhumed because authorities were uncertain as to where the site Gein was capable of single-handedly digging up a grave during a single evening. They were found, as Gein described. Two of the exhumed graves were found empty. One had a crowbar in place of the body. The casket was empty. One casket Gein had failed to open when he lost his pry bar, and most of the body was gone from the third grave, yet Gein had returned rings and some body parts, thus apparently corroborating Gein's confession. Soon after his mother's death, Gein began to create a woman suit so that he could become his mother, to literally crawl into her skin. Gein denied having sex with the bodies he exhumed, explaining they smelled too bad. During state crime laboratory interrogation, Gein also admitted to the shooting death of Mary Hogan, a tavern owner missing since 1954, whose head was found in his house. But he later denied memory and details of her death. A 16-year-old youth whose parents were friends of Gein and who attended ball games and movies with him reported that Gein kept shrunken heads in his house, which Gein had described as relics from the Philippines, sent by a cousin who had served on the islands during World War II. Upon investigation by the police, these were determined to be human facial skins carefully peeled from corpses and used by Gein as masks. Gein was also considered a suspect in several other unsolved cases in Wisconsin, including the 1953 disappearance of Evelyn Hartley, a La Crosse babysitter. During questioning, Washera County Sheriff Art Schlelly reportedly assaulted Gein by banging his head and face into a brick wall. As a result, Gein's initial confession was ruled inadmissible. Staley died of heart failure at 43 in 1968 before Gein's trial. Many who knew Staley said that he was traumatized by the horror of Gein's crime, and this, along with the fear of having to testify, especially about assaulting Gein, caused his death. One of his friends had said he was a victim of Ed Gein, as surely as if he had butchered him too. Did you like the recipe list there?
That was really seriously fucked up.
That's one of the most disturbing lines of shit you'll ever hear. Remember when I read that entry the first time? It was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think we know that his dad's occupation as a tanner is where he learned some of his skills.
Yeah, you're right. That's probably where some of it came from.
And then his affinity for Nazi atrocities would be another great place for him to have learned some of the things that he did.
Yeah.
Because they did some of those things.
Yeah.
So that's still so... I mean...
He didn't find any redeeming qualities in Ed Gein.
No.
So you're like, oh, but he liked kittens.
No.
So... all is good. It all goes out in the wash. No, yeah, it was holy shit.
You almost don't know what to say.
No, you don't. But unfortunately, it's a podcast, so you got to say something.
I know.
So that's how this works. When I was a wee young lad, about 18, uh-huh. I worked at a radio station up in that neck of the woods in Wausau, and there, this Plainfield is in the listening area.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the towns that we covered. And I remember there was some event we had down there where we were like, we're at a bar some night DJing. I think we were DJing. I don't know what it was. It was a Saturday night thing. Our station did club events, and it was the club event for the station. And Plainfield is just a small little burg. There's like, I don't know, it's Wisconsin, so there's probably like one bar for every person. So that being said, there's probably about 150 bars in the town. But no, there's really, I don't know, probably like, I don't know, I'm going to guess 5 or 10, mm-hmm. which seems pretty high for that small amount of people, but it's Wisconsin. And I remember this because I didn't really know about the Ed Gein story much other than he was a bad man, mm-hmm. and a killer. They're like, oh yeah, this is the tavern that so-and-so worked at. So, and he's buried right across the street over there, across those railroad tracks. And there's a cemetery you can kind of see, mm-hmm. like, oh geez. But apparently
his grave. And I think this is covered in here. If not, well, I'll give you the personal insight. People kept stealing his grave, his headstone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they ever, it says unmarked, so I don't know that they ever replaced it. I mean, it would cost money to do that. I don't think anyone would want to spend the money on Ed Gein's headstone.
Well, and then they would probably have this as a reoccurring thing.
Yes. It just got to be so much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, if I were a person in that town and I discovered that he had, you know, exhumed the corpses of my family members, I'd destroy his headstone too. Fuck him. I mean, I get it. It was like retribution, I think. I don't necessarily think, I mean, I'm sure there's part of it where there's like people who were, you know, just like kids doing, stole Ed Gein's gravestone and now let's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there was also like, fuck you. Why should anyone even recognize that you are a human, that you existed if you went and made, you know, a bodysuit out of my Aunt Lucy?
Sure.
You know, I think that's like, I'm fucking knocking over your grave. I'm going to destroy it. I would too. Mm-hmm. I, because you can't hurt the person when they're dead. But sometimes it's just like therapeutic to go and say fuck you in some other way. And I think to a serial killer like this, and I don't condone destroying graveyards. I think it's a horrible thing for most people. But if it's a serial killer, you get a pass.
Okay. You still can't like tell people.
I don't think you should do that.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone should do that. That's not recommended. It's not endorsed. But I'm saying if I were that person and I were in that situation back in that point in time, I probably would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I guess what I'm most surprised about is how most people probably have never heard of this guy outside of Wisconsin.
I'm surprised. I guess it's one of those things I thought was just known.
Mm-hmm.
There, but the thing is, you may not know his name, but you know the shit that he did because it was portrayed in many different things. And we'll get to that as we continue into our chapters of the story. On November 21st, 1957, Gein was arraigned on one count of first-degree murder in Washara County Court, where he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. Gein was diagnosed with schizophrenia and found mentally incompetent, thus unfit for trial. He was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, now the Dodge County Correctional Institution, a maximum security facility in Waupun, Wisconsin, and later transferred to the Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. In 1968, doctors determined Gein was mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense. The trial began on November 7, 1968, and lasted 1 week. A psychiatrist testified that Gein had told him that he did not know whether the killing of Bernice Warden was intentional or accidental. Gein had told him that while he examined a gun in Warden's store, the gun went off, killing Warden. Gein testified that after trying to load a bullet into the rifle, it discharged. He said he had not aimed the rifle at Warden and did not remember anything else that happened that morning. At the request of the defense, Gein's trial was held without a jury, with Judge Robert H. Golmar presiding. Gein was found guilty by Golmar on November 14th. A second trial dealt with Gein's sanity. After testimony by doctors for the prosecution and defense, Golmar ruled Gein not guilty by reason of insanity and ordered him committed to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. Gein spent the rest of his life in a mental hospital. Judge Golmar wrote, due to prohibitive costs, Gein was tried for only one murder, that of Mrs. Warden. He also admitted to killing Mary Hogan. Ed Gein's house and 195-acre property were appraised at $4,700, equivalent to $42,000 in 2020. His possessions were scheduled to be auctioned on March 30th, 1958, amidst rumors that the house and the land it stood on might become a tourist attraction. Early on the morning of March 20th, the house was destroyed by fire. A deputy fire marshal reported that a rubbish fire had been set 75 feet from the house by a cleaning crew tasked with disposing of trash. Further, those hot coals were recovered from the spot of the bonfire, and fire from the bonfire's location did not travel along the ground to the house. Arson was suspected, but the cause of the fire was never officially determined. When Gein learned of the incident while in detention, he shrugged and said, "Just as well." Gein's 1949 Ford sedan, which he used to haul the bodies of his victims, was sold at public auction for $760, equivalent to $6,700 in 2020, to Carnival sideshow operator Bunny Gibbons. Gibbons charged carnival goers 25 cents admission to see it. Gein died at the Mendota Mental Hospital of respiratory failure, secondary to lung cancer, on June 26, 1984, at the age of 77. Over the years, souvenir seekers chipped pieces from his gravestone at the Plainfield Cemetery until the stone itself was stolen in 2000. It was recovered in June 2001 near Seattle and was placed in storage at the Washera County Sheriff's Department. The gravesite itself is now unmarked, but not unknown. Gein is interred between his parents and brother in the cemetery. The story of Ed Gein has had a lasting effect on American popular culture, as evidenced by its numerous appearances in film, music, and literature. The tale first came to widespread public attention in the fictionalized version presented by Robert Bloch in his 1959 suspense novel, Psycho, in addition to Alfred Hitchcock's 1960 film, Psycho. Gein's story was loosely adapted into numerous films, including Deranged in 1974, In the Light of the Moon in 2000, and an Ed Gein documentary, Ed Gein, the Butcher of Plainfield, and the Rob Zombie films House of 1,000 Corpses and its sequel, The Devil's Rejects. Gein served as the inspiration for a myriad of fictional serial killers, most notably Norman Bates, Leatherface, a.k.a. the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, and the character Dr. Oliver Dresden from the TV series American Horror Story Asylum. So there you go. You think you know, but you have no idea at all. What is that? It was like some, wasn't that like an MTV thing of, I'm trying to remember what that.
I don't know.
I don't remember. Anyway. So it was around 2001 where they had just found the gravestone. Mm-hmm. So that's why I guess it was popular bar talk at the time in Plainfield, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So like, hey, they got the grave. Surprised they didn't like bring it into one of the taverns or something and use it as like a table. It's like, hey, I have a drink from Gein's grave. And then they would make a mixed drink called that, the Gein grave.
That's gross. That's really gross.
I could totally make drinks for everything there. I'm sure they would come up with something like that. Or is it just probably too close to home?
Too close to home.
Because it happened right there.
Yeah. Still not enough time. Still too soon.
Yeah, I don't think you really ever have enough time in a case like that when you're in, the town where that happened. Because there's still people around today that know somebody or something was attached to that while it was going on. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, I'd love to know who found the grave or who had the grave. And that's a long way to take a gravestone.
Yeah.
They're heavy.
Yeah. Somebody hauled that in the back of a van all the way to Seattle.
What the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the story of Ed Gein.
Okay.
Thoughts?
As screwed up as I thought it would be.
Did you expect more? Did you expect less? What were you?
No.
What were you expecting out of Ed Gein's story?
I honestly didn't realize it took place this early. I thought this was more like a 70s kind of serial killer.
Nope.
Did not realize. And I just think that's really interesting that, you know, they quote unquote diagnosed him as having schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot more that goes into planning this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Than somebody with that would be capable of doing.
I'm sure it was one of those, you know, they put that label on a lot of things at that point in time.
Yeah.
I don't think that he would have the same diagnosis today.
No.
But there you go. That's the lovely story of Ed Gein here on our first episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Okay.
Hope you enjoyed. We have many, many more stories to come.
If you like this podcast, please press subscribe, whatever platform it is you're listening to us on, and leave us a review. Let your friends know that we exist. Brand new episode every single week. Until next time, for Jenny, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening to The Dark Side of Wikipedia.